Snyder. Dylan. And you.
Thank you for tuning in to another fun episode with your favorite Mask Moms, Jennifer, that's me, and Juliana. Hello.
Hey, sorry.
Maybe it's just me. Lori is MIA today, and apparently Juliana is too. So welcome to a fun episode. This episode is a recap of your recap of your recap of our awesome Mask Moms trip to Disney. We spent a lot of time doing our recap on Universal last week, so this is recap part deux, all about Disney. But first, apparently some of us need a mask cocktail more than others. So Juliana, what are you drinking?
So like you said, we focused a lot when we tried to cover so much on our lives. So since this one, we're going to focus a little more on Disney since we did so much Universal on the live. So I figure we did some drinking around the world, not, you know, the whole thing that people do, but let's do some of our drinks from Epcot that we liked so much. Not the one that tasted like grandpa, which for those of you that follow our Facebook page was a live that we shared while we were in Epcot about a drink that really did taste like grandpa's aftershave. We didn't care for it at all. And Lori let you know. So, I was just really happy to have some beer again. And during Food and Wine, they have some really tasty beers. We know that Jen loves the Schafferhofer grapefruit beer, but I was just thrilled when we stopped, and it wasn't a kiosk, but we stopped in the American Pavilion at the Regal Eagle, and they had my absolute favorite American beer, which is Hazy Little Thing from Sierra Nevada. And it's like, it's a delicious IPA that I cannot get where I live now. And I was really happy to buy a pint and drink it all by myself.
Also, and I don't know. I know that wasn't a booth.
No.
And I don't remember ever stopping at the American Pavilion for drinks. So I don't know if that part is new, but that whole area with the Regal Eagle Smokehouse, that was so awesome and cute and tasty. I'm wondering if that bar area is new too, because they had a lot of beers on tap.
Right. I don't remember the bar area from previous trips. So, the Regal Eagle has seating outside and then inside, but then right at the outside is like this little kiosk with beers and ciders. But it's attached to the restaurant. So you guys went in and got the food and I stayed and ordered my beer and then met you inside. But then there's also the kiosk or whatever you want to call it, where we got the lobster roll as well.
Yeah.
And I believe – and they had beers too. Oh, and I got a coffee blonde ale from there that was absolutely delicious, perfectly paired with our lobster roll. So I enjoy the beer. I also had on my way as I was running out of the park to make it to Disney Springs to buy the extra suitcase that I needed to get all my stuff home. I grabbed one of the best thing about Food and Wine is that they give you like sample size beers. Well, they don't give them, but you can buy sample size beers so you can taste a bunch. And I tried a pineapple beer in the Hawaii kiosk on my way out that was, really quite tasty. Might have been a little on the sweet side, but not really. But really strong in the pineapple flavor. It was good. Anyway, but you, Jen, what was your favorite Epcot beverage?
So my favorite Epcot beverage in general, or one of my favorites if I'm not drinking the Schafferhofer beer, is to go to the France Pavilion and get their orange Grey Goose slushy, which is available year-round. So this year for the Flower and Garden Festival, actually, they changed it up. And as we know, the Flower and Garden Festival of 2020 was cut short like so many other things in our lives. And so for Food and Wine this year, they actually called it Taste of Epcot, and they brought back a lot of things that were offered in the spring for Flower and Garden but didn't get long enough of a shelf life. So this was one of those awesome things that was brought from that. It was called La Vie en Rose, and it is also a slushy. It's a lot like that orange Grey Goose vodka slushy. but not as sweet and so delicious. And I like it so much that I actually went to my liquor warehouse last week and bought the ingredients to make it myself at home. And it was delicious. It tasted
It did, because the one in the park was really good.
Yeah, it tasted just like it. But I have to say, on our Epcot day, it was about 90 degrees. So our La Vie en Rose slushy, by the time I got it back to the table for everyone, it was not a slushy anymore.
It was crazy hot.
And since I'm back in New York, it stayed a slushy until I drank the whole thing. So it was delicious. Yeah, I highly recommend it. It's orange Grey Goose vodka still, just like in the orange slushy. But it also has the Saint-Germain liqueur, and it has a combination of red and white cranberry juices. And that's it. Just made in slushy form.
Interesting. I thought there would be like a rose water or something.
I thought so too. I thought so too. But nope, those were the only ingredients that I found. Now, of course, this is not the official Disney recipe. I couldn't find that anywhere. But you know, they have copycat recipes of everything that you could eat or drink in Disney if you Google hard enough. And this is the one that I found.
I Google hard.
Right? And it did taste like exactly like our drink in the park.
That's so awesome. So the Saint-Germain, that's like a elderflower, right?
And it is really – I need to find other recipes for this, because that is what makes that flavor in this drink also. It's so good.
So I actually have a whole cookbook called Drinking French, I think is what it's called. And it's Dave Leibovitz's cookbook. And it is all about – cocktails. Actually, I have that one and another one about drinking French. I think it's that one that's really a ton of cocktails with Saint-Germain.
All right, so, well, you'll have to send me like your favorites.
A copy. Yeah.
Tasty.
Yeah. Cool.
And the other ingredients, I mean, everybody has those ingredients in their well-stocked liquor cabinet. So
I mean, don't they?
So why not? It was really good.
Yeah. And super refreshing and not too sweet.
No, that's the thing I like about it. Because, you know, I don't love a sweet cocktail. So.
Right. And when something is frozen, it can be a little sweeter than if it wasn't. But but this one was good, frozen and unfrozen, drank it unfrozen.
Yeah, I was going to say, it doesn't need to be. I bet I could do it over ice and it would be just as good. Because like I said, in Epcot, by the time we drank it, it was not frozen anymore. So, and it was still delish.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so now that we have had our cocktails, I guess we can talk about the Disney World portion of our trip. So so we did a split stay, which is what those in the biz call a stay at the Walt Disney World Resort, but at two different resort hotels. Mm-hmm. So where'd we stay, Jen?
So our first resort that we checked into was the Caribbean Beach Resort. And I used to recommend to like former clients and friends and family and everything that if they were really kind of stuck between two resorts to go for it. And anybody can do a split stay. It's not really annoying at all to move your stuff. The only thing that was a little bit annoying is having to pack and unpack twice, or in our case, three times, because we stayed in three hotels because we were at Universal first. But if you're ever doing a split stay, the other thing that I would recommend is to do it the way we did it, where we stayed at a moderate resort first, and then we leveled up and stayed at a deluxe resort to kind of close out the vacation. Because, you know, deluxe resort, there's more pampering, you feel fancy. But Caribbean Beach Resort was, I thought it was great.
I liked it. I was surprised by how much I liked it. I thought it was nice. You know, as sprawling as it was, it didn't feel too bad, but then again, I didn't have children in tow. So that makes a big difference. Yes. Lori made a really good point about, you know, if you need to get water, it's kind of far and things like that. Well, we didn't have to worry about any of that when you know, when you're alone and don't have anyone else to worry about.
Right.
You don't have anything else to worry about.
So we stayed in a fifth sleeper room, which means that we had two queen size beds and then a bed that pulled down from the wall. And the AKA Juliana's bed.
The toddler bed.
The toddler.
I mean, I guess, yeah, we can, I mean, I guess, are we, so I guess we can cover all that like in a specific review of Caribbean Beach.
I think so too. I think that the main thing to remember is that this resort is huge. It's totally spread out. There are multiple bus stops, but on the opposite side of that, this is the only moderate resort that is also on the Skyliner line. And not only is it on the Skyliner line, but it's the main hub. So if you're staying at Caribbean Beach Resort, all you have to do is get on the Skyliner to go to Hollywood Studios or Epcot. You don't have to change. This is where people come from Riviera and Pop Century and Art of Animation to change Skyline lines to get to their destination.
So that also makes this resort pretty desirable among the moderates, probably one of the most desirable moderate at present. So book early if you want it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So we did two nights there and then two nights, right? Yeah. And then we switched over to the Contemporary, which was a first for all three of us, I think.
Yeah. I love it.
You cannot beat the convenience of the Contemporary. I have a lot to say about the Contemporary, but again, well, stay tuned. It's a little teaser.
Absolutely.
But it was great. It was convenient. And again, a step up being that it's a deluxe and you definitely pay for the convenience and a little bit bigger room and all that stuff. But again, the view. Yeah. So we'll get into all that.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we did on this trip that I don't usually get to do with my kids is spend a lot of time in Disney Springs. We spent a couple evenings there so that we could try a whole bunch of stuff because, you know, we Mouskabombs love our food.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And the funny thing is, like, we touched on this a little bit last week about how surprised we were with how much we loved Universal. But at the end of our Universal stay, I think the three of us were all ready to get back home. And home being Disney. So it was really exciting to be back. And we literally dropped off our luggage in our room, took some pictures of the room, and then took the bus over to Disney Springs so that we could spend some more time there and visit the shops. Things are a little bit different now versus when we were there, you know, pre-COVID. We had to go through a health check before we even got into the main shopping and eating area. So we had to get our temperatures taken. Masks were required, obviously. There were a lot of signs reminding you not only that you had to wear your masks, but how to properly wear them, which I appreciated. I hate walking around the grocery store around here and seeing people with their masks covering their mouths. So thank you for that. But hey,
right,
your nose should probably be covered too.
There also were, I'm not sure, I think we mentioned this last week too, but there are also vending machines for masks right there too at the screening station and scattered throughout Disney Springs. So, Right. And you wouldn't get that far without a mask because you can't walk around anywhere without a mask. But let's just say you sneeze a particularly ugly sneeze in your mask or something disgusting, or you just get hot and sweaty and you need a refresh. You can buy a disposable mask from a vending machine, which I think is really cool.
It was really cool. But the interesting thing is you could buy one of those disposable single use masks at the vending machine for $2. But in general, we were finding that the cute little themed masks from both Universal and Disney ran about $6. And those were not disposable and they were adorable. So I guess that's kind of good to note also. Like, if it's just a matter of you wanting to bring a spare mask in, don't necessarily rush to buy your $2 disposable one.
Yeah, I find the cloth ones more comfortable, even the Disney ones. I had read that the Disney ones were heavy and not comfortable, but I found them to be breathable and soft.
Yeah.
And They make a great souvenir. They sure it's practical. It's practical nowadays. My kids are like, Mom, you brought us a lot of masks. So yeah. I was like, well, I wanted to get you something you could use. Exactly. So that, exactly. You know.
And nobody in their classes are probably wearing the same masks as they are.
Right. Because side note, Disneyland Paris does not sell masks, or at least they didn't for a really long time. They made the decision not to get involved in that trade. So they sell disposable masks.
We asked you to get us some. Yeah. There and you're like, nope, can do.
No, they don't. They'll sell disposable masks in the park for you know the same purpose that we just talked about. But I have not yet. Maybe they've changed. I have not yet seen cloth masks. Like they were everywhere at Disney World.
Yeah. So our first day there, we did a lot of shopping, or at least like walking into the different stores. We wanted to check out Coach and Vera Bradley, and I know you got your sunglasses fixed and all that.
I did. I needed a sunglass hut because my sunglasses, especially with a mask, they just kept sliding down my nose. So the first thing I had to do was go get them tightened. And who knew that sunglass icon is by Sunglass Hut? And they were wonderful and they were so sweet. And if you're interested in Mickey sunglasses, they have them for both children and adults. I have never seen that at any other Sunglass Hut before. So,
well, all of these stores I thought was really interesting had like little Disney sections. So you could get your Disney Vera Bradley and you could get your Disney Coach and regular Coach also and regular Vera Bradley also. But that was kind of cool to see because I have three boys and a husband and a daughter who nobody likes shopping. So this was kind of a fun treat for me. What I did notice, though, on that first day is a lot of the shops, I think it was like a Monday or a Tuesday, a lot of the shops closed really early, and the hours didn't always jive with what was posted online. So keep that in mind if you're heading over to Disney Springs and thinking you're going to do a lot of shopping in the evening, you might not.
Yeah, you'll want to shop before dinner. I think Coach closed at 6, Vera Bradley closed at 8, at least while we were there.
Yes.
The World of Disney, of course, didn't close, I want to say, until 10.
I think so. But those, you know, World of Disney, good thing that you mentioned that one, because that one, you had to wait online to get in. They were very, very strict. All the stores had occupancy numbers listed at the front of the store. And I think most of them were, you know, they had somebody manning the front of the store to kind of keep track. But obviously, because the World of Disney is such an attraction in that area, that one you had to wait online to get in. And then once they let some people out, they would let another batch of people in. So,
And so I ran back there at one point and, you know, the line was like, it was just starting because the line gets really big as soon as the parks close and everybody files into Disney Springs. And, you know, the store itself has many entrances and exits, but they're only obviously using one entrance. So the line will, so it's the entrance like closest to the, parking, you know what I mean? Like the non-center of Disney Springs, but toward the back end of the store is what they use.
Yeah.
And it wraps around all the way. But for me, it moved really, really fast. I think I waited like 5 minutes, but I think it was just timing. Like we were the first group of people lining up. It moves really quick. And I got in and I, you know, walked around and ended up walking out empty handed on that particular excursion. But yeah, shopping was fun.
If you want World of Disney and that's a priority for you, you're going to want to make some extra time during the day to go, because in the evenings, like when we were done with dinner at 8:30, 9 o'clock, it was impossible to get in.
Right.
But then the later you wait, I think Lori said like 10 of 10.
Mousketeer. That's right. She said that she was able to, because she wanted to run in real quick before it closed. And we were like, you're not going to get a chance. You know, you might need to go to the co-op or the Disney Style store instead. And she was determined. And she said she walked right in because it was 10 to 10. And, you know,
and
by that
back
point.
With like three shopping bags.
That's right. She did. So I had never been in the Disney Style store or the Disney co-op store before. And those are really neat.
Really cute. Yeah.
So Disney Style is like, I don't want to say high end because it's not high end, but different, you know, different Disney clothes, not the same sort of thing that you see in every Disney store. Right. Not t-shirts, not even spirit jerseys, but just like exercise clothes or just some neat stuff that you might where? And then the co-op, can you explain that? Like, it's like, it was almost like different vendors, like a mall.
Yeah, it was like an indoor, it was an indoor co-op. So you had different stalls selling different things. So there was a Dooney and Burke stall. There was an NBA stall. There was a stall that sold accessories and things, Disney themed things for your pets. There, you know, it was really cute. So it was sort of like an indoor mall. That's another one that you, we didn't have to wait online for it, but I know that that would be a possibility because there are so many stores in that one indoor area that it does get, you know, up to capacity. But that was fun to look around.
I really loved all the Dooney and Burke purses. I could not justify the purchase because I ended up having, like I said, having to buy a duffel bag from Vera Bradley to get all my stuff home. So that was my baggage purchase. But one thing that's important, I think is great to mention, is that the Dooney and Burke was accepting, because a lot of times the brand names don't accept discounts, right? Mm-hmm. So, right. But even Dooney and Burke was accepting the annual pass holder discount.
Yeah. And a lot of them also, like if the item had a store discount, they would stack that discount with the annual pass holder discount.
So right.
For some of those items, it was kind of a double dipping situation.
Right. So it was any like Disney owned store that was doing that. Coach wasn't doing it even on their Disney stuff. Vera Bradley wasn't doing it even on their Disney stuff. But I was impressed to see that you could use it on the brands in the Disney stores. So that was cool.
Yes, it was fun. That was definitely the one part of our trip that we had talked about doing that we actually followed through and did. Because a lot of the stuff, well, I think we did a lot more than I even thought that we would get to do. And that goes into like our next topic, which is the eating and drinking. I think that our approach to eating and drinking in Disney Springs was awesome and such a great Mouska tip for people who are planning a trip and who are really stuck between, oh my gosh, there are four restaurants that I want to try in Disney Springs, but I only really want to go there for one or two nights.
So what
we did was we actually went to several different restaurants every night and we just ordered a couple of appetizers and a drink from each restaurant so that we would have room in our bellies to try multiple places and also kind of not spend $1 million.
Right.
Doing that.
It does add up. But it's funny too, because we are by nature just planners, right? So I know when I take my family to Disney, I have a plan where we're going to eat, what we're going to do. And we thought we did, as you all heard us planning, we thought we knew what we were going to do. And then we adjusted what we thought we were going to do because things weren't open or whatever. And then we turned all that on its head when we were there. We didn't know whether or not we would be able to just go into a restaurant and sit at the bar because of COVID precautions. We didn't know how busy places would be. So we didn't know where we would really need reservations or where we wouldn't. And we ended up just sort of making decisions kind of on the fly, kind of the night before even.
I think a couple nights before we had the conversation when we were still in Universal and we were like, you know what? I'm nervous because Universal dining, if you remember from our last podcast, Universal dining wound up being a mess and they weren't taking reservations, but then you couldn't just walk in because there was a 2-hour wait. But then if you go to guest service, it was just a mess. And we got really nervous that even though we know Disney so well, we didn't really know Disney during COVID. We got nervous that we had all these plans and that we were going to wind up with nothing. So I think a day before we were supposed to go to Disney or 2 days before, we decided to make a couple of reservations just to be on the safe side.
Right.
And I don't think we really needed them. Once we got there, we saw that it was not.
Well, I think there was one that we definitely needed. And that's Homecoming. Is it Homecoming or Homecoming? I've seen it
Homecoming.
Both ways.
Homecoming.
That's what I
thought. The official Disney website is Homecoming.
Okay. So but I noticed that in the restaurant, the flight of I'm going to have to look at one of the pictures, the flight of moonshine that we got, the paddle that it was on said Homecoming with a G, and I thought, well, that's weird.
Oh no.
Anyway, so Homecoming, you know, five years ago when I went with my family and we first ate there, it was really relatively new, about a year or so old, and it was not – you needed a reservation, but it was not hard to get one. It has become one of the harder reservations to get in Disney Springs.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. I love it.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. I think that was probably my favorite that we ate in.
Oh, for sure. But that said, Mouska tip, right? We couldn't get a reservation at Homecoming in advance. I've looked for friends. But if you wait until a day or two before, sometimes you can. You just have to keep checking because Disney has a 24-hour cancellation policy on reservations where, you know, technically if you cancel within a day or the day of, they'll charge $10 per person on the reservation. So people sometimes hold on to them and then drop them at the end. So if you don't know, I mean, I wouldn't count on it, but right. You can keep trying. And we did, right? 2 days before we were able to.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened is 2 days before, or even maybe the day before that 24-hour mark, we just decided to check again. And there was one that had availability. So we were able to get a reservation. Right. So we had, and I don't remember which ones we had on which night, but we wound up having three reservations. We had a reservation at the Edison. We had one at Homecoming and we had one at Paddlefish. We didn't need one, nor do I think you can get one at Jock Lindsay's. And Polite Pig is a quick service, so we didn't obviously need one there.
So that's all the places that we were able to fit in our time and stomachs.
I
there was so many more I wanted to try, but hey, we'll just go back.
We'll just have to go back. And the other thing that I do want to mention is Hollyo, is that how you pronounce it?
I believe so.
That one we really wanted to go to, but that one is only open, I believe, Thursday through Sunday.
That's right.
So you do want to keep that in mind when you're making your dining plans, quote unquote. You do want to check the websites and make sure that what you have planned is what you're actually going to be able to book when the time comes.
So. That's right. I had forgotten why we didn't get to that. Yeah. And is that just a current situation or is that always?
That is just the current situation.
I see. Yeah, I was disappointed about that. I was also, we didn't get to Wine Bar George, which is fine. I'll save that for another time. Yeah. I was a little bummed that I didn't try a daily poutine. And that literally, that wasn't a time issue because it's just a walk-up window. Right. I couldn't do it.
And I think, like you said, I think that we'll come back and do separate podcast episodes about each one of these venues. But I think one of the other important things to keep in mind in terms of restaurants, and this goes for restaurants throughout Walt Disney World, you know, in the parks and everything, is that a lot of the menus were abbreviated because of COVID. And that's not too different from what we're experiencing here in New York. I know a lot of the restaurants that we used to frequent pre-COVID, their menus are still abbreviated as well. So
yeah, I've also noticed in my regular life here that not only are menus abbreviated, but in some cases, quality was sacrificed a little bit. I know my favorite, and one of only like three breweries in the city that has fantastic food and a fantastic environment, used to have a fantastic burger, and now it's just meh. And it was just meh when everything opened up again, and I thought it would get better again, but it's still just meh.
Yeah.
I will say I did not – no, yeah, I agree.
Except for one.
Well, we'll get there. Yes, you're right. But well, yeah. So, but overall,
general, it seemed like even though these menus were abbreviated, it seems like they kept their most popular items. Which
I felt like the food had gotten better too. Like
Homecoming was exceptional.
Well, Homecoming's always exceptional. Oh, but we even noticed at Food and I keep saying Food and Wine, but they're calling it Taste of Epcot now, right?
It was delicious. You're right.
It was better than normal. And I don't know if it's because I always say, you know, the food at Disney's great, but keep in mind they're cooking for hundreds of thousands of people a day, right? Yeah. Like overall. So.
And big standouts were the lobster roll. I mean, cooking for that many people, you would expect, you know, a lobster roll that was decent but tough because it's hard to cook lobster in general. And then for that many people.
Fast food lobster, really. Exactly, I mean, that's what it is.
Exactly. And it was die for.
I think that in many, many cases, the food was a lot better than I remembered. And of course, there were a lot of things that were new to me that that
were so good.
Yeah, that were still delicious. And Jen did allude to one that was a little disappointing. We will do a deeper review, but should we mention what it was right now or should we keep the suspense going?
I think we should keep the suspense.
Okay, we're going to keep the suspense. Stay tuned. Yeah, stay tuned because you know that we have a lot to say about food. I think we might
They need to be separate episodes or else we will go on for 3 hours.
And I think they might even be separate episodes in categories. Like, I don't even think we can cover all the restaurants in one episode. But stay tuned. We'll let you know, guys. Follow us and you will not be disappointed.
Yeah. So you want to move into our park visits?
I do, but I have one other question for you. Yeah. Do you remember that there was something that came out that said like some dishes, well, let's talk about the discounts at the restaurants real quick right now. So some dishes were supposed to be discounted at a 30% or something, but then overall there was like a 10 or 15% AP discount.
Yeah.
But I don't remember getting a bigger discount on certain dishes. Do you?
No. So discounts, it was announced like the week or so before we left that there were going to be discounts on signature dishes in select restaurants in Disney Springs. And I think the reason we didn't notice is that we were not ordering for the discount. We were ordering for what do we need to try in each restaurant that's like, I mean, at every restaurant we were asking our server, you know, what's the most popular thing? And we were getting those because research, and we wanted to make sure we were able to speak on the quality of the restaurant and why people go there. So I think we didn't notice those discounts because we probably didn't order those dishes.
We just weren't ordering the right
However, most, like 98% of the restaurants on Disney property give discounts regularly for annual pass holders or Disney Vacation Club members. So we were getting those discounts. So I think that's what we sacrificed discount for taste.
Yeah, but and I mean when it comes to food, I'm going to do that. I might buy the cheaper shirt if it's like not my favorite color, but I am not buying the food.
Yeah. So I think that's why. I think that is the only reason why we didn't see more of those discounts is just we weren't ordering those dishes that happened to be discounted.
Okay. So yeah, I was wondering because I thought that's weird. I didn't notice. Okay, so that's that. All right, so let's jump into the park. So our first park day, and I think we talked a little bit about this, and of course we did a live about our mixed emotions on Hollywood Studios.
Yeah, I think it was a tough one, a tough park to start with, and I think we knew that going in because even pre-COVID, Hollywood Studios is the one theme park that has just been getting more and more crowded and busier because of all the new improvements and, of course, the opening of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge and everything that comes along with that.
And honestly, like Hollywood Studios is one of my favorites. I love walking in and that feeling that you're like on a movie set. It's always been one of my favorites. But even before Galaxy's Edge, not let alone before COVID, I found it to be a really difficult park to plan for. And I am one of those people who plans my park days minute to minute. I want to optimize. I'm an optimizer. I want to hit the rides with the lowest lines when they have the lowest lines. And there really is a science to it. So I am one who would plan minute to minute. And it worked for me and my family. It doesn't work for everybody. But Hollywood Studios was always a particular challenge because you're not dealing with just rides. You're also dealing with shows. Mm-hmm. Again, now throw COVID into the mix. The shows are gone, right? Mm-hmm. There's no shows that are happening. Are there any?
The day that we were there, the Frozen sing-along opened that day, but we did not see it.
So it's hard because those are timed. So you can't just like squeeze them in. So that was always a challenge for me. But again, the shows are out of the picture. Throw Galaxy's Edge in there and now you have to worry about getting a boarding pass for Rise of the Resistance. And
no fast passes to anything right now.
Right, right. And then throw COVID and forget it. Right. Yeah. This is the park that is reaching its limited capacity every day.
Yes. Yeah. It's, you know, when we were there in the middle of the week. We were there not in a school vacation. You know, on paper, it should have been the ideal time to go visit that park. But in reality, it's just, and somebody else was saying it too. When you think about Disney theme parks, you know, picture in your mind Epcot, picture in your mind Animal Kingdom. Those are two enormous theme parks in terms of square mileage. So it's easy to spread people out, and it's easy to make it seem or appear that the parks are empty. But then you look at Hollywood Studios and the Magic Kingdom, where they're just smaller parks.
Right.
And so that's for people to disappear into. And now right. you have queues outside because they're not wanting people to wait on queues inside where right. it's, you know, you're in an enclosed environment. They want you to keep outside more. So it looks even more crowded. And
with the shows closed right. at Hollywood Studios, like at least Magic Kingdom has tons of rides.
Yes.
But Hollywood Studios has like six.
Yeah.
So there's nowhere for people
to go. There's no funneling anymore. Everybody is on the same handfuls of attractions. And so even though you have 25% capacity still in the parks, you have 25% capacity, but all of those people are going to the same four, five, six rides.
So tell me if you agree. First of all, I'm glad that we went so that we could better advise friends and followers. Mm-hmm. I think we made a big mistake. Mm-hmm. And I think our big mistake was, you know, you guys probably know, I think we mentioned, we did not get a Rise of the Resistance boarding group at 10 a.m., which was a huge disappointment. But still, you know, we'll go back, right? We know we're going back. Right. So bummer, you know, I traveled all that way and I didn't get to ride it, but that's okay. we'll cover that in a minute. But what's my point here?
I don't know.
Oh,
sadness.
Gosh. Oh, the huge mistake that we made was, and we should have known better, right? This is what we do. We should have known better when we didn't get the boarding group, and then we wanted to ride what was most important to us next, mm-hmm. which was a big mistake because the ride that was most important to us next is the first ride you see when you walk in the park. It's like riding Spaceship Earth first at Epcot. Don't do it. The line gets shorter throughout the day. So we were there. We were bummed. We were a little negative. It was hot. We were cranky. We had breakfast, but I don't know what our problem was. Anyway, so we went straight to Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway because we got nervous. The sign said the wait was 2 hours. Turns right. out, sidebar, it was not. I think they're overinflating wait times because they don't want the queues to wrap around the park three times. Mm-hmm. It turned out to be about 65 minutes, which is fine. But the thing is, the posted wait time after opening, like after 9:30 or after 10:30, 11, went down.
Right.
And so we spent all that time, that hour waiting in line where we could have maybe gone to the back of the park and done Millennium Falcon first and right. waited 40 minutes and then come back and waited less time. And then maybe we would have had more time to get other things in. So that was our mistake. And I'm glad that we made it. So now we can tell other people not to make the same mistake.
And I think we had another mistake. I think before we even left, we had conversations about how we were going to get to Hollywood Studios because all the things that we had been reading was saying that it was very congested first thing in the morning because that's the most coveted park, yada, yada, yada. So I think we should have gone with our original plan, which was to Uber over to the boardwalk and just walk from there.
Right. Because – like you said earlier,
I think that we made that mistake because there's conflicting information from Disney. They do not want you in the parks early. They do not want congestion. They do not want to start letting people in. But you know what? They are letting you in early. They are letting you on Main Street. Not only are they letting you on Main Street in the Magic Kingdom, but they are opening some of the rides, letting you on those rides before the listed park opening has. You know,
but the weird thing about – so Hollywood Studios, though, is not opening rides before, are they? Like, I thought they were just letting people on to Hollywood Boulevard.
I don't think that they're opening rides, but they are opening more than just – what do you get to first, Hollywood Boulevard?
Right. Yeah.
They're opening more than just Hollywood Boulevard so that you're not congesting that area, which is the same reason why they're opening more than just Main Street, so that people who are inevitably going to come early to the parks are not, you know, congesting and social distancing isn't becoming an issue. So we should have arrived early and
we did. We should have. But would that have made a difference? So just so people, so for those of you listening, what we did, you know, we thought we were being all strategic is we had breakfast that morning at Topolinas Terrace, which will just suffice to say we really loved. Mm. We'll tell you more about it later. And then that's at the Riviera Resort. So from the Riviera, you go to Caribbean Beach because like Jen said, Caribbean Beach or well, like Jen said, Caribbean Beach is tomato, tomato, right? Caribbean Beach or Caribbean Beach. I think at Disney they say Caribbean. Mm-hmm. It doesn't come out of my mouth. Caribbean Beach is the hub of the Skyliner. So everybody coming from everywhere going to Hollywood Studios gets off there and reloads. Mm-hmm. So even though we looked out the window from the restaurant and we're like, there is no line for this Skyliner, we walked right on at Riviera, but hey, you have to get off at Caribbean Beach. And we knew that there would be a line there. We didn't expect it to be 40 minutes long. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was. It was a little, but we were still in the park by 10, no?
We were in the park by 10:01.
And so that was our mistake.
Yeah, by 10 o'clock and 5 seconds, or I think they said 11 seconds,
yeah,
all of the boarding groups were sold out.
So that was our problem. That said, they do a second round of boarding groups at 2 o'clock.
They do. Depending who you ask, if you ask the cast members, they're like, you have an equal chance of getting it at 2 that you did it at 10. But if you look at some of the blogs, that's not the case. So who knows?
Poppycock.
Bottom line is we did not get it. And I think that you really do. You need to be in the parks before 9:30.
Right. And if for no other reason, right, even though like it really doesn't, you plan to be there at 9:30, it doesn't matter. That's not going to improve your chances, but it sure does save you a lot of anxiety. I mean, we were stressing. We were just like, and that's no way to start a day.
Yeah, it definitely contributed to our nasty mood.
Yeah, we were not. We did. We went live while we were standing in line and we were not pleased. But at the end of the day, we ended up having a great time. So I had never been to Galaxy's Edge. I loved it. I thought it was amazing.
I got my Ronto wrap. I was thrilled.
That was did not look tasty. That thing was delicious.
Right? It was so good.
I really want to go back to eat one now.
Yes.
It was so delicious. So it's like they say on the menu it's pork sausage. To me, it tasted like chorizo.
100%. It was kind of like the idea of it was kind of like a shawarma. It had like coleslaw in it.
It was like a Cuban sandwich, right? In that it has like the Cuban doesn't have sausage, but it also had roasted pork.
Yes. Yeah, it did. You're right.
Wrapped up in a pita. It was like a combination of many different ethnic foods, and it was delicious. It was so
good. And we got to go to Oga's. That was another thing with our Mouseketeer.
That was on my bucket list, and that's not something that I was going to do with my children, right? Yeah. Like, what are they going to do in there?
Reservation, again, like we said before, that one opened up the day before also.
A couple of days, yeah, it did. So, it's
definitely worth it to just
keep checking. Find a planner who will check for you. Not only did it open up,
but it was the exact time that we wanted. It didn't interfere with anything else that we were doing. It was perfect. We got to go in. We got to have a couple of drinks.
Right. That's so the thing about Oga's is it's really just drinks. They have like maybe two appetizer kind of things on the menu, but it's like pretzels and charcuterie or something like that. It is more adult friendly than child friendly, and it's not something that you want to plan for at lunchtime or at dinner time. Yeah. So the off times for that one are good. There's your third free Mouseketeer for the day.
Yeah. And it was, I mean, my thing is it's a one and done kind of thing, although now I've been there twice, but I had to go there once with my family and then I went with you girls. The drinks are nothing special and they're extraordinarily expensive. But the place, the vibe is cool. The servers, the bartenders, everybody's very much in character. So that's really cool. If you're a Star Wars fan.
It was pretty fun. It was I'm just glad to say that I did it.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But the one thing, there's another one that was on my bucket list for Hollywood Studios that we just, it wasn't that we didn't have time and it wasn't that, you know, that we couldn't get in. We just opted not to do the Brown Derby Lounge because in COVID times, it's a different experience than it normally is.
Yeah.
So the Brown Derby Lounge is outside of the Hollywood Brown Derby, which is Hollywood Studios' like iconic restaurant. I think it's modeled after an actual restaurant in Hollywood, right? And it's really cool. I've eaten inside the restaurant when I was a teenager, and it's neat. It's fancy. It's a signature restaurant, and they have this famous Cobb salad. It's good, but obviously it requires a reservation and a wallet. But the Brown Derby Lounge, what I love about it and have always wanted to do is that it's just this like patio outside of the Brown Derby restaurant, and it's right on Hollywood Boulevard, and it's great for people watching, and it's got like maybe 10, you know, outdoor tables, you know, the like nice outdoor tables and a bar. And it's not a quick service per se, because they do have table service for food, I believe, unless you order your food. I never did it, so I don't know, but it used to be either you ordered your food with a server or at the bar. But you went and you put your name in, and then you would get called back to get your table. So it was like a walk-up restaurant. They didn't take reservations. And you could order your drinks at the bar and take them to go, or wait until you got a table. And I'm not really certain how the food service worked or the drink service once you sat, because I never got a chance to do it. But they do have a full bar menu and a limited menu. They have their famous Cobb salad on the menu. They have the charcuterie on the menu and a few other things that sound delicious and are probably the only things I would want were I eating in the restaurant anyway. But during COVID times, one, the atmosphere did not look as cool. It just seemed really stark. Mm-hmm. And two, they weren't offering the food. So it was right. And I don't even think there was a put your name in. It was like a, you know, order a drink at the bar and just stand there and wait.
Right.
So we just were like, oh, forget it. So that was a little bit of a disappointment, not for most people, just for me, because it was on my list and it's very rare that I get to go without my kids, blah, blah, blah. So I look forward to the day that one in particular gets back to normal.
Yeah.
Knock on wood.
Yeah. So. But I think everything or almost everything else on our list, we got to do. You guys got to do the Smuggler's Run. We got to go on the Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway.
Which I loved.
Which was so adorable.
So I did say it was a mistake to do it first. However, I will also say it was a great start to our Disney World vacation overall, because it was classic and iconic and just adorably done. And it put me in a good mood.
And new, which we go to Disney so often that we don't always get to see something brand spanking new. So this was kind of,
it was adorable.
A good intro, especially after our rough start to our mid-morning.
Yeah, it definitely shifted us. And Disney does that, right? They know how to do it, right? Yeah. Something puts you off and then all of a sudden you're back on the train.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we got to do Rock and Roller Coaster, which was great because Lori hadn't done that in years and years and years. So that was – I mean, that one's always a fun ride. I do have to say I missed the pre-show. Because
the pre-show is so great. I mean, I love having lived in Brighton, Massachusetts, where Aerosmith got their start, and having actually met Steven Tyler in a local restaurant. I love them. I love Aerosmith. Like, I feel like we, Jen, grew up with the second coming of Aerosmith when they reinvented themselves with Walk This Way. I love Aerosmith.
Yeah.
So as cheesy as that opening show is.
But it sets the tone for the rest of the ride.
It's so great.
That you lose the idea of what this attraction, like the story or anything, without seeing that. But it definitely was sad. And I don't know, because we did not like doing rides and attractions in our Disney part of the trip was not the priority for this trip.
Right.
So we can't really like I'm wondering if Tower of Terror is the same thing. I can't possibly imagine that you do that pre-show in the library.
Right.
But I don't know for certain because we did not ride that ride.
Right. But, yeah. So some things are obviously a little different and I appreciate it because I don't want to be crammed in a room with all those people.
Yeah. And again, I don't think that really much of the storyline is lost. I know Disney is so big on carrying their stories and their themes, but it was still super fun.
Well, same.
0 to 60 in 2 seconds.
Same with Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, right? There's a pre-show there that you have to miss, but I do remember the cast member sort of dumbing it down into a sentence, like, hey, walk through this wall that Goofy knocked over, you know. So and having never ridden it before, I didn't feel like I missed anything. I think that you having ridden it before might have been like, oh, you know.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I only rode it once because, again, that was another thing that was open for a week and then COVID.
Right.
But I missed it only to the extent of, it's another thing that COVID is taking away from me.
Right.
But in terms of loving the ride and experiencing the ride, I don't think it really makes much of a difference at all. But I can't wait for the day where you guys can go back and see that and be like,
I can't either. Yeah, so much to hold on to. And one of the things, though, that I do think improved at Hollywood Studios was Baseline Tap House. They seem to have added a whole lot of picnic tables outside, which, because it's a small little bar. It's great. The drinks are great. The beers are great. And the snacks are decent, more than decent. But it was tough. You know, you couldn't get a spot to sit. You ended up just picking up your stuff and leaving if you didn't get a table inside or a spot at the bar. But now they have this whole patio area, which I thought was fantastic. And the line to get in there never seemed terribly long, maybe four or five people deep. So that was a COVID silver lining.
And I think that's a silver lining that leads into our day in Epcot also, because I think in Epcot in general, we also saw some great changes to Food and Wine, which I hope, like, there are some COVID changes that I hope stay with us as far into the future when all of this is over. And that's one of those things, is that during Food and Wine Festival, it's always a joke. It's always funny. You always see all these memes on Facebook of people eating, like taking their food from the booths and eating it on top of garbage cans or whatever, because there is just no seating. But because there's this rule now in all of Disney World that you're not supposed to take your mask off unless you are stationary and eating and drinking. You can't just walk around with your drinks and food anymore. They had to accommodate for that. And so they introduced all of these, like, what are they called? Bistro tables.
Mm-hmm. And high tops, right? Yeah.
High tops and just more seating in general. So I think we sat everywhere we ate, which was nice.
It was lovely. You're totally right. That was a huge silver lining for Epcot. So segue right into Epcot. That was the second park that we did. And I have to say, you know, we didn't, I would say we didn't ride a single ride, but my dear friends, we did do
the best ride.
We did do the Three Caballeros. What's it called?
Yes. That's what
is that what it's called?
Right? Yeah.
Fiesta. Exactly. Something, but there's another word in front of it. Anyway, I had actually never ridden this ride. And I'm glad I did. It's super cute and so it was great, but that is the only ride we rode. We really didn't spend any time.
When you went to make your Vera Bradley purchase and Laura and I were on our way out, we went to Journey into Imagination.
Oh, that's right. You did. And you know, I've never done that one either.
What?
I know. Isn't that crazy? It's crazy. I hate to even admit it, but I've never done it. I might have done it way back when.
Mm. Well, but we did it.
Not that I remember. Actually, I'm sure I did it when I was like 14, but I don't remember.
I think when we first got to Epcot, which opens really, really late now, I think it didn't open until 11.
Right. It used to be that Future World opened at 9 and the rest of the park opened at 11. That was sort of their main hours. But now everything doesn't open till 11. And since we knew that we were really just there for Taste of Epcot, we didn't show up till noon.
Yes, and we also, is that the day that we went to the Polynesian? Is that why?
Yes.
I don't remember why. Yeah.
Yes, so we started our day.
We started with a Dole Whip.
Right. We were staying at contemporary. So we just, but you couldn't take the monorail. That's right.
We had to drop off our luggage because we were moving resorts. So we went to check in at the Contemporary. We put our stuff in our room. We took some pictures, gawked at the amazing view, and then decided to take the monorail over to the Polynesian for a Dole Whip because why not?
Because a Dole Whip.
Because and, breakfast.
Right, because breakfast. A Dole Whip. We may or may not have gotten it in the way that you can only get at the Poly and not at Magic Kingdom, and you know what I mean. Mm. So we got the Dole Whip, and then we discovered that you couldn't take the monorail from Polynesian to Epcot.
From anywhere to Epcot.
Right.
That line of the monorail was closed.
Right. So you could take it from Poly to the Ticket and Transportation Center, of course, but the monorail that runs the loop between the TTS or TTC and Epcot is not operating right now.
Right. So we had to bus it over to
So we Epcot. Had to bus it.
Yeah.
But that day we were not stressed. We didn't care. We had no agenda.
And in fact, that's what I was going to say. So we took the long way over to the World Showcase because we wanted to walk past Test Track. And it was only a 45-minute standby wait, but we kind of made the executive decision that we would rather eat.
Yeah, we just were ready to get – we were so excited to not have an agenda and to just stroll right. and enjoy. Because we truly – the only plan we had for Epcot was to make it around the World Showcase. And even that was tough in the 7 hours that we had. It was not so easy because we – again – it's a little more difficult with kids. I understand that. Right. However, I will say that there is plenty in the World Showcase for children to do and see and enjoy. We just you just have to know.
Right.
But we don't often get to, I never get to spend a solid seven.
And I think also an important Mouska tip here or Mouska lesson is that I think in general our consensus was that our Epcot day was our best day in Disney. And I think it's 100% because we had no agenda.
Right. And again,
we really just went with the flow.
Right.
And we,
right.
you know, if there was a booth that had a longer line, we just skipped it and went back to it later.
Right.
And it was great.
Right. Having told you already that I am someone who plans every minute of every park day, usually in Epcot, I only plan in the morning. I plan mm-hmm. for the first couple of hours with the rides. And then after that, it's a free for all. And there's a list of things I sort of want to check off, but you don't have to worry about it. It used to stress me out. I will say the character meetings in the World Showcase used to stress mm-hmm. me out a little bit because the characters were only there in the morning hours. And then, but without shows now and without character meetings and without shows, COVID silver lining, I had more time to eat and drink and explore the pavilions and they're so detailed. There's so much to see.
And a note about characters, we saw a ton of characters.
We did.
So we just did not schedule them. It was so nice to walk out of the Mexico Pavilion and be like, oh my God, there's a cavalcade right there. And we just walked over and we got to see Mickey and Minnie and Donald and Pluto and I mean, it was perfect. And that happened in each of the three theme parks. We did not get to Animal Kingdom on this trip, but in the three parks that we did get to, we were able to see these pop-up surprise character cavalcades. And I thought that it was a much better way to see characters.
It was so chill. It was so chill. It was so nice.
Everybody got to see them. They happened multiple times a day. They were not scheduled, so people did not line up. They just kind of really did pop up. But especially in the Magic Kingdom, they were on a constant revolving schedule. So we saw some of them several times, which was really
Yeah, I loved really it. Nice. We have so much to say about Magic Kingdom. I don't think we're going to get to it today because we're already running long.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have to save Magic for another day. But a couple of things I just wanted to mention about Epcot. We talked about sort of skipping over Future World. I do want to mention how different Future World looks right now. There's a lot happening in Future World for the future. There, I didn't mean to do that, but I did it. There's a lot, but because there's a lot of help me, Jen. What's the word I'm looking for? Improvements and changes coming to future worlds, and they're sort of reimagining the whole thing.
The whole thing.
So right now, as you walk through, there are walls up. You know, beautiful walls. Disney knows what they're doing, but it was different. How would you describe it?
So if you've been to Epcot before and you know the way that you currently like to tackle Epcot, don't think that you're going to do that this time.
Because seriously, I got lost on my way out.
Yeah, they do. They redirect you through all these different like backstage areas that are usually closed, because that whole entryway where the fountains are and where that that beverage place used to be, and all those places are closed right now because they're doing a total complete rehaul on the whole entrance area of Epcot.
I'm really excited to see what they're going to do.
It's going to look great. It's kind of unclear about what their timeline is now. Of course, all of this construction was supposed to be finished in time for 2021 for the big 50th anniversary of the opening of Walt Disney World and the Magic Kingdom. And, you know, Magic Kingdom went through a huge rehaul when they did that Fantasyland reboot. Mm-hmm. And then Animal Kingdom was next on the list with that whole Pandora area. And then, of course, last year, in the last couple of years, with Toy Story Land and now Star Wars Galaxy's Edge over in Hollywood Studios, this was supposed to be Epcot's turn. And it's unclear about, I mean, I know that they have kind of pulled back on things that they previously announced. Disney is notorious for not announcing things or refurbishments or changes or additions until they're pretty much set in stone, but COVID. I know that there were plans to do like a Mary Poppins attraction in the UK, and that's now been shelved.
Right. But I think all the things that they were planning to do in Future World, though, I think they discussed at D23 last year. Yeah. And I don't remember off the top of my head everything that they were, but instead of like Future World East and Future World West, there and all the everything, the lands were all changing. And I feel like this, I'm so excited to see it. This is going to make Epcot a 2-day park for sure.
Oh, I think so. If it isn't already.
If it wasn't already. Right. Now it will be. It will be. I feel like it's a day at Future World and a day at the World Showcase. Yeah. That said,
there's walls up for all of that stuff. There's walls up still. Space 220, which is the new, you know, restaurant that's supposed to be opening in that area. It was supposed to open in February, and then it was supposed to be opening in the spring and then over the summer. And now who knows? The walls are still up for that one. The walls are still up, and construction noises are still going on for Garden.
Right, so that's yeah. So that's the good news, is the walls are up. They've started. They're committed. Yeah. It will happen. Yeah. We just don't know when.
We don't know the timeline.
It's So it's not completely tabled. It's happening. I'm excited.
Some of those are completely tabled though, like the Mary Poppins thing.
Yes. Yes, but I'm excited to see, you know, for me, the World Showcase can stay as it is right now. Ratatouille, we did want to do. We were hoping beyond hope. It looked like it was nearly open. We snuck some photos. We'll post on the Facebook page of what the entrance kind of looks like. But again, that's still behind walls, and that's a little disappointing. But it will be opening. I'm sure it will be opening. You know, my guess is going to be early 2021.
And I think they're going to be tabling it for a while.
Do you really?
Because I think that the 50th anniversary is now going to not be as enormous as they had been hoping for, because some of these projects have had to be shelved. So I think this is going to be their incentive to make it huge.
For the anniversary? So that'll be next fall.
By postponing some of these things, like Harmonious, which is their new fireworks show. I think everything is probably going to all open up at once in the fall, like a year from now.
See, but well, yeah, maybe, hopefully, God willing, a year from now, things will be relatively normal and they can handle the massive crowds. Oh, that's a good point.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, so we'll see. It remains to be seen. I think Ratatouille, you know, from what I could see, which was not much, it seems like it's complete. If not nearly complete, but maybe they're just holding off on the opening of it to keep the crowds at bay.
I think that's what it's going to be, because there's no reason why that shouldn't have opened already. And really, Space 220, I mean, I guess I get that a little bit more, because a lot of the restaurants haven't opened yet. But I think it's strategic.
Yeah, you're probably right. You know, we can all speculate, but who the heck knows? I just know that huge things are coming to Epcot. And while some things might be tabled indefinitely, there are clearly some things that have to come to fruition, because the walls are up and they're not going to leave it like that forever. And if it doesn't happen until fall 2021, then we'll just go back again and again and again so we can see it all.
And it's definitely long overdue. I'm excited. Epcot needed a rehaul, so this will be really cool.
I'm so excited. Epcot's had a few rehauls over the years, but never one as major as this. Yeah. You remember Captain EO?
Oh, I loved Captain EO.
And I also remember
Captain EO made a comeback too.
I remember, like, I want to say 30 years ago, at Epcot, they used to do this, but this is when I lived in Florida. They used to do this, like, because Epcot was not a huge park for Disney. They used to do this after 4 p.m. in the summer for Florida residents. It was like $15 to get in.
Right, because people would go just for dinner.
So
don't they still have an annual pass that's like that, that's just for Epcot after four? I thought that
I have no idea. But this was like a Florida resident, no commitment, you know, whatever. And we did it 1 year.
I totally buy that.
I remember, like, some sort of, like, Jules Verne, like, and I'm not talking about 20,000 Leagues in Magic Kingdom, but there was some, I don't know. There was, I remember Captain EO, and I remember some sort of show. Yeah,
the Jules Verne dude was the guy from the Magic Mega, the jeez, what was it? Dreamfinder?
That sounds right. If any of you know, I'm counting on you, Jonathan. If any of you know, please post it on our Facebook page, because this is a little trip down memory lane I'd like to take.
I think he was the Dreamfinder, and he was the guy who was on the original attraction with Figment, and I think he and Figment were supposed to be the icons of Epcot, but Figment is the only one who's stuck because the Dreamfinder was a little bit creepy.
Long gone. So yeah, so all of that into consideration, Epcot is due for a new overhaul, and I am beyond excited to see what happens and when it happens, and I can't really wait. And I think, Jen, I think we have to have a part three, and we can do it with Lori.
Yes. And, you know, I think we have the most to say about the Magic Kingdom anyway. So this is appropriate. So,
okay.
We do need to end.
We'll pause here. And Jen, what's our mouse tip for the day?
Our mouse tip of the day. So we all know that the new system in Disney is you can't just show up and decide that day what park you're going to go to. You need to make park reservations. And it's more important than ever to make those park reservations as soon as you make your travel arrangements and you book your vacation package to Disney, because FYI, my family is going to be going back. We're going to Disney over December break. And we just went to go based on, you know, my trip with the girls, we went to go modify our park reservations. And thank goodness we are opting out of Hollywood Studios one day and replacing it with a different theme park, because if it was the opposite and we wanted to add another Hollywood Studios day, it would be too late because they are almost completely sold out at capacity at Hollywood Studios for every single day that we are there. So you're definitely going to want to make your park reservations the minute you know you want to go on vacation.
Absolutely.
Yes.
All right. So that's it for debriefing episode number 2. Stay tuned for debriefing episode number 3, where we're going to talk about our day at Magic Kingdom and anything else. And if there's anything else you guys want to hear about, we'll be happy to cover it. Just send us a question on our Facebook page. And that's about it. We'll do a lot more podcasts where we're going to devote our time specifically to our favorite topic, restaurant reviews, and so much more. We've got so much more to share with you and so much more to say. So keep checking the – we skipped the news today, so keep checking our Facebook page for all the latest. And check out our new blog. We have launched our blog We've been posting lots of great articles there as well. So that would be mousekamomsblog.com.
Thank you for listening and having a drink with us this week. Tune in every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for new episodes. Mouse Commoms are Disney vacation planners. Visit our Facebook page, Mouse Commoms Podcast, for daily information or to book your magical vacation. These Disney moms are signing off. And remember,
please stand clear of the doors. Por favor, manténganse alejado de las puertas.
Now it's time to say goodbye to all our company. M-I-C.
See you real soon.
K-E-Y.
Why? Because we like you.